Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Suderstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Friday, August 1st, 2014. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
Well, it was a real exciting day yesterday in the stock market, and certainly we're having a better day in the precious metals. We have gold currently up $13 at $1,294. We have silver. It tried most of the day to be to the upside, but we're down 9 at $20.39. Platinum was up 2 at $14.68, and palladium was down 8 at $868. The phony baloney. We're just going to go right ahead to the paper markets.
Yeah.
Paper markets. You have another decline in the U.S. stocks. We've had a week of losses. You have the Dow dropping another 69 points at 16,493. The NASDAQ was down 17 at 43.52, and the S&P was down 5 at 19.25. And the 10-year yield after the big gains of yesterday is 2.50 at down 0.05. Crude oil is down another 40 cents at 97.46. And the USDX, I couldn't bring that up on my chart, see if I can now, was down 0.14 at 81.33, the USDX. So not a bad day for gold after it also got hit yesterday with every market out there. And it was interesting, all 30 Dow shares were down. It was an average of 97% of the shares in the S&P and the NASDAQ. They were all down. And so it surprised me. You would think that numbers would be a little bit steeper than what they were, as steep as they were. You would think that with all negatives coming out of the stock market, all losers, should have been a lot worse. But,
you know, one of the things that implies is this. And I've seen other reports along these lines that argue that the Dow, for example, is being carried by just a handful of stocks. Handful of stocks are doing well, and they're big enough where they can carry the Dow. Now, that handful might be, five. It might be, I don't know how many that handful amounts to. But what I'm getting to is this. If it were true that only a handful of major stocks could support particular stock indexes, then if the government were in inclined to manipulate the markets, all they'd have to do is sustain those that handful of major stocks. They don't have to support all the markets. All they have to do is support all the stocks. They just have to find, you know, half a dozen, ten, I don't know how many, five. I don't know how many it would take.
That's my point. They were all down. All 30 of the shares of the Dow were down yesterday. The majority of the NASDAQ and the S&P were also, you know, 97, 98% of them were losers, so you only had one or two. But you have many more shares in the NASDAQ and the S&P. So I don't know. It was just kind of an odd day. And, of course, they do keep things from being manipulated. And, you know, discussions abroad were, you know, you pick it. You know, it was all of the above that had an impact on the markets, even just from, oh, it's just a correction. You know, we're due for a correction, and that's all you're seeing right now. So, you know, you can take your pick. I think it was all of the above. I don't think it had any, I don't think it had much to do with, I mean, everything just is terrible out there. Our economy, the world economy, we have wars. They slapped Russia with fresh sanctions out of Europe, and much deeper this time. And Russia comes back and says, hey, you know, we've been putting up with it this long with all your silly little sanctions, but these have gone a little bit too far. So things are not looking good coming out of that area. And I really do believe that had probably had a little more impact on it than any one single thing. Of course, you could point to Argentina, their default.
They're just white noise right now. I don't think Argentina is all that significant. It's possible that there's a domino effect that might be triggered by Argentina. I don't see it as being especially important relative to the U.S. or global economies. It's important in Argentina, of course, but outside that, I don't think there's going to be much
You know, and certainly there are some, you know, funds here in the States that are looking to get paid. And, you know, this went to the court. The U.S. District Court judge, you know, scolded Argentina. That's how serious it is, how he scolded Argentina.
Ooh, got scolded.
The country's obligations to pay U.S. bondholders who obtain court judgments must be resolved, likely through negotiations. You know, so of course,
which means he doesn't want to push them to where they quit. Point one, he knows he can't enforce this.
Right.
Which means somehow Argentina has to be persuaded to voluntarily pay some or all of the alleged debt. Mm-hmm. So he's trying to push them into some sort of negotiation where Argentina agrees, well, we'll pay something. So we'll watch and see if that succeeds or not. But
so I don't think that.
What's the lesson in this, though, Melody? One of the lessons is, what's the United States or investors within the United States, what are they doing investing in Argentina? You know, if you're going to invest in a foreign country, you have to assume that there is a certain amount of risk. I don't care what foreign country you're talking about. If you're going to put your funds overseas, there is necessarily more risk there than in a comparable investment here in the United States. Just because, if push comes to shove, where are you going to litigate this issue? And who is going to enforce? Great, you can maybe find a United States court who will enforce an order of the Bank of England or Cameroon or someplace to pay you the money they owe you.
They'll scold them.
Yeah, they'll give them a scolding. Ooh, this is going to go on your record. Do you understand? Hey, who gives a darn? The point being, you know, in difficult, risky, chaotic times, you want to keep your investments close to home. If you're going to invest in something other than gold or silver, you know, I mean, gold or silver, you can put that in hide that in the garage. If that's what you want to do. If you're going to go out into stocks or something, you should at least keep them close by where the venue where you might sue if you had to is convenient to you and applies to where you're making your investment. I think all of this is, I think this lesson is going to be learned by a lot of people. And in the chaos that is growing in the international markets right now, there'll be a lot of people that are just going to say, I'm done investing overseas. Now, it's not going to stop we're still going to have a lot of overseas investment. I know there's a lot of opportunities and whatever that are difficult to resist, but you've got to at least factor in the possibility that if push comes to shove, where do you get to push and shove? What's convenient for you? Are you going to go to a port in Cameroon or England and expect to triumph against an English corporation or Cameroon business or whatever?
Well, you know, I often said about, you know, there's a lot of different gold programs, you know, storage of your gold overseas, you know, certificates from one country to another. And to me, in today's world, and yes, we'd like to think it seems like it's big and, you know, maybe people feel like they become one of the players of the world that it's more of a,
it's an ego trip to some degree.
But in today's world, I wouldn't have anything in any other country, not if you're a conservative, not if you want to control and protect what you have. But today they came out with U.S. employers extended their solid hiring into July by adding 209,000 jobs. Of course, the good report wasn't enough to keep the stock markets to the upside on the day, even with this report of a sixth straight month of job growth above 200,000. And of course, it was less than what it's been in the previous 3 months. And of course, they didn't want it. They couldn't have this report too strong, Al. Or it might suggest that the Federal Reserve would soon raise interest rates to help curb inflation. So, you know, they know how to balance the game. You know, they know we don't want to go too far. And that's how these numbers are reported. They're not real numbers. It's numbers that they know how they can control policies. And so you have a consumer, they also that is consistent to job growth. You have better consumer spending is up. Manufacturing is strengthening. And auto sales are up. We could tear all those apart. What's interesting is you had the unemployment rate. It actually ticked up in July to 6.2% from 6.1% as more Americans started looking for work. Now, most of them didn't find jobs, but the increase suggests that they're more optimistic about their prospects. So,
well, that makes all the difference in the world.
Doesn't that make the difference
in the world?
I'm sure
you can go down to McDonald's and order a quarter pounder with cheese. And explain to them, well, I don't actually have any money, but I'm more optimistic than I was last week or a month ago. I'm sure they'll feed you the quarter pounder without any problem.
What was Popeye's counterpart, Wimpy? For a hamburger today, I'll gladly pay you on Tuesday.
Yeah, I understand.
Construction added 22,000 and financial services 7,000, and it's fourth straight gain. The April-June quarter, we all know they readjusted those. I don't think there is any much consumer confidence. The Consumers Board of Consumer Confidence, that index jumped to its highest level in nearly 7 years in July. So, again, high numbers in the stock market certainly play a big part in consumer confidence numbers.
Do you know who started the Bureau of Consumer Confidence? P.T. Barnum. There's a consumer born every minute. That was his slogan. And P.T. Barnum, he started the Bureau of Consumer Confidence.
Something else here I found interesting now. Japan and Brazil, they signed treaties in the energy, infrastructure, mining, and educational areas. Japan has agreed to lend Brazil nearly $1 billion to be invested in offshore oil platforms and in the production of grains. These loans were announced today between Japan's prime minister and the Brazilian president. Japan is going to lend $500 million for the construction of 8 ship hulls for offshore oil platform and $200 million for the production of soybeans and corn. So I find it a little interesting that Japan is sort of negotiating their own trade agreements. Again, it shows that they're breaking away from the U.S. control. Japan, you know, from what we always found, Japan wouldn't hiccup without the permission of the U.S. They did whatever the U.S. told them. Now it seems to be with the new Japan's prime minister that he's certainly a mover and a shaker and is trying to do things to help Japan. And so I found that interesting in addition. But
I'll tell you what interests me. When they said that they have invested, I thought you said $500 million at one point. Is that true?
That's true.
Did they mean, does the article mean that they invested the equivalent of $500 million, but they actually invested yen? Or does it mean they actually invested $500 million? Because if it does, the question is, are they investing the $500 million, or are they saying, we got to dump this $500 million before it turns out to be worthless? Are they investing the $500 million? Are they dumping the $500 million? Catch my drift?
Yeah, I do. And it really doesn't say. And what I found interesting, too, you would think that since there was the big meeting just a week or so ago among the BRIC nations, that with the opening of their new World Bank, that perhaps the loans would have come through there with some sort of mention of that. But it just says $1 billion. It doesn't specify whether it's yen. So I would have to suggest that it is. Because usually whenever the...
Suggest that it is what?
U.S. dollars.
Yeah, I think it probably is. I think they're dumping dollars. And they're saying, look, Brazil will take them. You know, it's the greater fool theory. You're good as long as you can find somebody that you can palm your paper investment off on. Somebody who's even dumber than you are. But when we run out of greater fools, that's when the whole system begins to collapse. For the moment, you might say that Brazil is the fool du jour. They're taking those dollars in return for something tangible.
What's interesting is for oil. It's to also to bridge and help out with oil. So again, you're pulling away from what was provided by the Middle East countries, Asia, you know, the Saudis, to where they're drilling and setting up perhaps for their supply of own oil. So again, that does break away from the U.S. dollar.
And there's another point also. It's not a surprise, and it's not news that people are investing in the search for oil down in the vicinity of South America. But it may be the supply of oil coming from South America is more reliable for Japan than a supply of oil coming out of the Middle East. They're just sitting back and maybe saying, look, the Middle East, that thing's about to go bonkers. Nobody knows what's going to happen there. We can't count on getting our crude oil from the Middle East, therefore we can ship it across the Pacific Ocean in a reliable manner.
Well, here's another idea that makes it a smart move for Japan, is we know the problem they have with China, and China is far greater than bigger than sure. Japan. So again, they're becoming more independent, and China has enough clout to shut off supplies with their negotiations. I mean, BRIC nations, you know? So
yeah, but the BRIC nations include China.
That's what I mean.
Well, what I'm getting to is that you can also look at this from the perspective that Japan is attempting to become involved with the BRIC nations as a means of creating a kind of influence with China, more so than it has right now. They might be able to go through a back door and talk to, once they get involved with the BRIC banks, they may be able to talk to Russia or South Africa or somebody and say, listen, will you talk to China and tell them to get off our back? That might be part of the thinking, but who knows?
There was another global trade deal.
Well, let's save it and we'll talk about that next global trade deal when we return to financial survival from a couple of commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663, or thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, and the program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
I just want to remind the listeners today is the last day for the 3-day silver special. Three different types of silver, 1 ounce silver eagles. They are dated 2014. We have 20 Morgan silver dollars. They're dated pre-1921. And we have 90% silver, $28 face value. It includes all your shipping costs for $1,550. We did have to reduce it a little bit because of the price of silver being down a little bit. And, of course, that includes all your shipping costs. Plus, you get an extra silver eagle. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. The product will be shipped to you by registered and insured U.S. mail. Visit our website, dgscoins.com. DGS for Discount Gold Silver Coins, coins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And, of course, you can listen to archives of this program daily. And, of course, then we have them posted monthly. A global trade deal that could have added $1 trillion to the world economy collapsed after India refused to ratify a pact struck last year in Bali. Now, you know, everyone says, well, India really doesn't have that much impact and so forth. Well, obviously it had enough that it made this new trade deal collapse. And it was hailed last December as the first global trade deal in nearly 20 years with the potential to generate big benefits.
We're not talking about the Trans-Pacific.
No, that's a totally different one.
Right.
That Japan put a little stomper in it, and that one should be revised again also in December. And who knows, maybe they'll combine both of them. I mean, I don't know, but no, this is not the same one. This is a different one. This is a different one. But the cost of the trade could have fallen by 10% to 15% as governments committed to slashing paperwork and easing border delays and transit bottlenecks. So, but India, backed by a handful of other developing countries, wanted faster progress on a related deal that allowed it to continue to stockpile and subsidize food for the poor. After failing to get this support, India pulled its support for this global deal to simplify custom deals. So it's interesting that I was trying to find the actual title of this trade agreement, but it was to formally adopt the Trade Facilitation Agreement.
Well, if I'm understanding correctly, and India is opting out of the trade agreement, or they're resisting it,
they prefer
custom trade agreements. I think they mean bilateral trade agreements, where India, instead of being trapped in some sort of an agreement that deals that covers, who knows, a dozen nations, 50 nations, I don't know how many nations are in this agreement, India prefers to deal on each nation with each nation on a one-to-one basis, set up one treaty or one exchange treaty with China, for example, and another one with Vietnam, and a third one with Indonesia, and each one is negotiated privately. I'm not against that. I think it's a good thing, because all of these massive monster treaties, to my mind, are conducive to a new world order and one world government, which is something I don't want any part of. Because
well, you know,
I know it means the destruction of the United States of America. We're going to cease to exist as a nation if there's going to be one world government. So,
true. And they're trying to protect their own people, too, for food, for the poor. So, you know, they pulled out of that. And, you know, we exported a lot of inflation to China. And, you know, if this trillion-dollar trade agreement, again, you know, it would have, you know, more jobs for everyone else except for Americans.
Yeah. Other than that, we are expected to pick up the Americans' burden and sacrifice our future and our children's futures for the greater glory of the new world order, Melody. One world government is just going to be great, assuming the whole world wants to live at a third world, at the level of a third world nation. And that's where we're headed if we're going to accept that. And we'll get there if people sit on their butts and do nothing and don't lean on their congressmen, senators, presidents, and even courts to reestablish the idea that this is the United States of America, and it is going to survive as a sovereign nation. It is not here to be invaded by illegal aliens. It is here to have solid borders and to deal with foreign nations on a one-to-one basis, and not just sit back and watch this country degraded, devalued, and destroyed with the complicity of our own government. Somebody's got to do something. This has to be stopped.
So I watched a video. It was a six-minute video. I'm going to try to get it into the newsletter this weekend. But it was USA Numbers. They had a little, I can't remember, the guy's last name was Beck. And it wasn't Glenn Beck, but it was Beck, I believe his name was. And he did he was doing a speech program. And he talked about immigration. Everybody thinks this is it's good to bring these, we're helping people. And he says, there's no way we're helping these people. We're bringing over a handful into this country, and we're hurting their country more than we're helping these people. He says, because usually the people that come to this country by way of illegal is people, some of, not all of them, but the majority of them that really do want to work. They're brighter, they're smarter, they're faster, and they should be trained in their own country. They could bring better assets to their own country if their countries were shown how to do things better. So instead of helping just this little handful of people, we should be helping the countries. And this little handful of people, as they're bringing into this country, is destroying our country because we don't have the infrastructure for these millions and millions of people that they're bringing in. And so by helping, I mean, there's so many, you just can't help everybody.
No, that's the reality of it. Again, you've got that lifeboat analogy.
Billions of people, but they use that.
You've got that lifeboat analogy where you can only put so many people in the lifeboat. And there are other people outside the lifeboat, and they want to get in the lifeboat. And if they don't get in the lifeboat, they're going to die. But if they do get in the lifeboat, they're going to tip the lifeboat over. You reach a maximum occupancy, and then even the people in the lifeboat die. And hard choices have to be made. And you can't just open the door and say, look, any of you are poor anywhere in the world, I don't care if you're in India, Africa, Mexico, South America, Indonesia, doesn't matter. You just come on up here and we'll take care of you. You can't do it. It's irrational. And again, hard choices have to be made. You can't sit back and say, we're helping people. Charity begins at home. Help the guy across the street, you know? Help the people in your own community. Forget about helping people in foreign countries. Let them help themselves.
Well, we need to show them how they can help themselves through
farming. You know, the truth of the matter is there's some cultures that can't learn. You know, we have a government that embraces the concept of multiculturalism, and they say we have to respect other people's cultures as valuable as ours. No, they're not. They're not as valuable, and I'll tell you why. Because the only thing they can produce are ox carts with wooden wheels. And it's not just a small thing. It may be colorful to watch people dance around and, you know, enjoying music from their country and the rest of that. That's all very colorful. That's all very nice. But here's the problem. Their life expectancy is 55 years of age. Their culture will not give you. They don't have a culture that can produce an economy and a system, a social system that's capable of generating something that anyone really admires. And people don't realize, they think, I can bring my culture from some foreign country. I can come to the United States and have everything that the United States has to offer, and I can still be a Mexican, or I can still be a Honduran, or I can still embrace the culture of Africa or something. It's a bunch of crap. The reason we have certain things, at least historically in this country, is because we had a particular system of values that was generally embraced by the entire population. And those values go to our culture. And you bring another culture and say, oh, we've got to respect their culture. They've just generated a new wooden wheel. I say, screw their culture. It's nice. It's interesting. It's like going to the zoo. All right, you can see other forms of life there, and it's interesting. But you have to respect what you've got and understand why you've got it. And then you have to preserve it. You can't just welcome these people and say, oh, we're all going to dance around our hats. We're going to be prosperous while we're dancing around our hats. No, we're not. Those of you who want to start singing La Cucaracha, you're going to live in poverty. And not many people get this, but it's a fundamental point. You want what other people have, you have to be what other people are. You have to embrace their system of values. You don't want to do it, you're going to stay right where you were. You're never going to get much better.
So the old saying, when you're in Rome?
If you want pasta, if you want a good pizza, you better do what the Romans do. If you don't want good pizza, fine, don't do what the Romans do. You know, that's, in a sense, a choice. But the Romans also have an opportunity to sit back and say, look, if you don't want our pizza, we don't want you. Get out of here. You're not going to buy our pizza? Buzz off. You can't. But these cultural values are incredibly important. You know, Pat Buchanan wrote, I don't remember the name of his book, but he pointed out that virtually everything that passes for civilization in the modern world has sprung from Christendom. And by Christendom, he means the nations of Europe, the United States, Australia, New Zealand. That's basically England and the rest of that sort of thing, Europe, the European nations. But Christendom laid the foundation for what became progress and prosperity in this world. We have other cultures that are trying to emulate, trying to get what Christendom has to offer, but they don't get it. You got to become Christians to do it. You can look at the Muslim faith. That faith is not necessarily conducive to prosperity. I know that plenty of Muslims are going to get rich and the rest of it. I get that. Not all Muslims are doomed to economic poverty. But there are elements of the faith, particularly when it gets really virulent and fanatical, that are almost medieval. And they may be attractive in certain regards, but they will not extend your life expectancy. They are not conducive to actually having wheels that aren't made out of wood. But instead, you got an aluminum wheel with a spinner on it. You got a rubber on the three-ply bias, whatever, radial tires. That doesn't just happen. It's not just science. It goes to a system of values. It goes to a culture. So if you want to bring your culture with you, you know, Russia did this, Putin. He said, if you're coming into this country, you're emigrating into this country, we expect you to learn our language and we expect you to embrace our values. We're not looking for, they're not looking for cultural diversity over there. If you want to come along, come along. You want to join in, and if you think Russia's got something to offer, sign up. Come on down. But don't come down and say, oh, what you need is to change your culture to resemble mine. Well, the Russians aren't going to have that. They aren't, I won't say that it can't happen or it won't happen, but they're not welcoming it. In this country, we're led to believe. When you are taught to believe that another nation's culture is deserving your respect, you are by implication being taught to not respect your own culture. You're being said, well, this one's just as good as ours. And it's not. And if you're going to embrace these foreign cultures, guess what? You're going to leave your children in a third world status. You want to embrace a third world culture? Great. You want to respect it? Great. If you have no respect for the fundamental values that were driving this country and drove, that pushed it up into prosperity and power and even glory for a while, you don't have any respect for those values? Are they foreign to you? Do you think they're irrelevant? Well, that's your choice, but you will live in poverty before this is all over. You will embrace those values if you want prosperity, if you want freedom, you want liberty, you will embrace those values. And if you don't understand what I'm talking about, you're taking yourself and your kids to a place that nobody wants to go. What else, Melody?
Well,
about a minute or two before the next break.
Well, we were going to talk about Mark Cook. He's a veteran investor. He was included in a best-selling book, Stock Market Wizards. He was the winner of the 1992 U.S. Investing Championship with a 563% return. He believes the U.S. market is in trouble. Does he know anything more than what we know?
Well, he probably does.
Highly unlikely, but
a lot of people know more.
Highly,
I'm not embarrassed. You know, everybody knows something. We all have something of value. Some
but
people
he sees
know
it
more
in
than
a
others.
Different way. He's relating to the problems that the U.S. is having, that the U.S. markets are having, and he uses a primary indicator. And we can talk about that. Do we have enough time to talk about that before the break?
Let me take a look at the – we have about 60 seconds. What we're talking about is he has something that he calls – this man's name is Mark Cook, and he has something that he calls the Cook Cumulative Tick. All right, a proprietary measure he created in 1986, and he uses the New York Stock Exchange tick in conjunction with stock prices, and his indicator alerted him to the 1987, 2000, and 2007 crashes. That indicator is now flashing red, essentially, and it tells Mr. Cook that the end is near. Now, and what he's anticipating is a 20% collapse in the stock market. A collapse, a correction, put your own word on it. But he thinks 20% is coming. Now, we've seen 3, 4% the last couple of days. He thinks 20% is headed our way. When we get back, we'll talk about whether we are on the verge of that serious correction or if the markets are going to probably jump back up in the next week or so. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Countries have have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here on Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom. Program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. Give Melody a call for great deals on gold and silver coins. We were talking when we broke for the last commercial interruption. We were talking about a stock trader by the name of Mark Cook, who uses what he calls the Cook cumulative tick, where he compares the New York Stock Exchange tick, which is a measure of percentage of stocks that are going up as compared to whether they're going down. It's a measure of overall market sentiment. And he compares that to the tick, to stock prices. And in those instances, when these two indicators have diverged radically, it happened at the first quarter 2000 and third quarter 2007 and April of 2014, now again, and most recently, in the past, this divergence, this radical divergence, has preceded a significant correction in the markets. So he, in any case, is anticipating a 20% fall in the equities markets, and he thinks it could be happening, could be starting about now. That's the implication. He didn't say that in the article, but he says he's not anticipating this happening, you know, 3 years from now. He thinks this could be happening soon. Now, the article was actually written several days ago and before the most recent stock market's down 3-4%, something like that, over the course of the last few days. So the question is this current decline in the stock market, is that evidence? Is that the beginning of a significant correction? Or is it just a little bump in the road, and can we expect the equities markets to pop back up, the Dow up over 17,000 again sometime next week? What do you think, Melody?
Well, I think his system might have worked in the past, but I just don't think it's going to be working this time, because I think the variables are so different this time. I mean, when you look back to 87, 2000, even 2007, I mean, there was huge bubbles that you could see and pretty much you know, detect when they were going to start falling. This time around, with all the stimulus in the system, and surely more to be applied or injected into the system, I think it's a little bit more difficult. I think everybody is, you know, we can agree that we're certainly closer, and we scratch our heads as we're puzzled that they can continue to keep it at these levels. But you've had two of the three markets touch highs, make record highs. And, you know, once you start making record highs, it's just, you know, it's kind of like, it's pretty easy to figure out it's going to fall. It's going to have a correction. And, but I think our system is far, is much more in a difficult situation than we were in 2007. So, whether you call it a pullback, whether you pull it a 10% correction, or is it going to be much more than that? I think it depends on how much impact the Federal Reserve can continue to have on the markets, because that's what's controlling them. And that's something that doesn't fall into their categories. I mean, they can't project that.
His previous analyses that worked well did so before the Federal Reserve became involved in quantitative easing.
To the degree that
it has been for the past several years. It's tapering on that. We're down to $25 billion a month, which is the same. You know, $25 billion a month right now, we sit back and say, that's no big deal. Because it would have been $85 billion a month. Now they've tapered off to $25 billion a month. So it doesn't seem like any big deal. But I'll guarantee you, if the Federal Reserve had been injecting $25 billion a month into the economy back around 2006 or 2007, everybody would say, holy cow, these people lost their minds or what? It would have been a big deal in that context. Today, we're not amazed by it. We don't look at it. But the truth of the matter is, it is significant. And insofar as it is apparently necessary, it's not evidence that, you know, the economy's hitting on all eight cylinders, that's for sure. So, but you're right, Cook's formula.
It's going to collapse, no doubt about it. Just
yeah, I know. But when?
You know, that's the question. My gosh, we could sit here and we could list off 20 different scenarios of what's going to be that deciding factor, that the confidence. That's what it is, folks. It's the confidence in the markets. That's what's getting. Once that cracks, and that's how do you determine when that confidence cracks? You know, which leads what? The falling of the stock market or a failing bank? Does that crack the confidence to where the rest of it falls, or is that confidence cracked first and then the rest?
I don't think anyone can answer that question exactly, but it's one of those things that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. It spirals and it feeds on itself. And as if a bank is the first thing to fail, then confidence declines. And that declining confidence causes another bank to fail. And when the second bank fails, then confidence declines even further, which causes a third bank to fail. And the thing feeds on itself once it gets going. And it's one of those domino progressions.
And, you know, we talk about the real estate, and I mentioned it a couple times on this program about how a realtor told me that his belief is the breaking of the system is going to be the banks that are holding all these foreclosed loans. I was talking to my cousin today that has condominiums and townhouses down in Ocean City, Maryland, and there was one next to theirs that was in foreclosure. And I said, he says, that's been in foreclosure since 2008.
Yeah.
He says, Bank of America owns it. They're holding it. They won't put it on the market. Mm-hmm. The association is having problems because they're not paying any of the fees. So they're trying to force the bank to put it on the market so it can be sold. So you have these banks that are holding these properties. I mean,
which means the supply of homes, condominiums, is much greater than the market reflects at this time.
It's the bank's assets. You know,
well, they call them assets. That's part of the reason they hold them. They're holding them. they've been holding them rather than sell them. They can hold them and say, this property was worth $250,000 a year ago or 5 years ago, and it's still worth $250,000. When in fact, if they put it on the market and it turns out they couldn't get anybody to buy it for more than $175,000, it would be evidence that that property was no longer $250,000. It was no longer a $250,000 asset. It was only a $175,000 asset. And if that kind of information propagates throughout the real estate system, a whole bunch of people that are sitting on real estate investments, and they say, oh, my total investments are worth $1 billion. Put them all out on the market, and you might find out, no, they're not. They're only worth about $700 million. You might lose a lot. So it's an accounting scheme to some extent. They don't want to put them on the market to diminish the prices on the market and to admit how little some of their properties are really worth.
So anything could come from any left field, and that'll break the system. So, you know, and if it breaks and it does a bigger correction, then I guess he'll be right again. But, you know, I did. Well,
he actually says he expects it within the next 12 months.
Mm-hmm.
That's all right.
So do we.
Yeah, so do I. You know, I mean, that doesn't. So do the people who read tarot cards and tea leaves. We have all reached within the next 12 months. We're pretty.
Ruby told me.
Yeah. Talk to the dog. The dog. He just, the dog sits there and nods wisely when we say 12 months. The question is, yeah, anytime within 12 months. And that could be tomorrow, and it could be next week, and it might be even now. Maybe it's already begun, or maybe not. We'll have to watch and see.
I got a comment in from Murray. He said, and it came in in the early part of the program today, about 4:15. So he says he's concerned about our idiotic government that has allowed Ebola patients into Tennessee and Georgia. He says, where will they turn up next?
I understand. These people are just crazy. They've brought Ebola. People suffering from Ebola says, oh my God, you got to be careful about Ebola. There's going to be a problem here with Ebola. And in fact, Obama has signed some executive order that allows them to detain Americans with severe respiratory illnesses on the suspicion that you might have Ebola. This is big trouble. This is bad news. But we're going to bring some of the people who have it into this country. Now, I understand if you're an American and you're in a foreign country and you get Ebola, well, you want to get back and get some treatment on this. I get that. And perhaps we have that obligation to bring these people back here. I get that. But it's also one of those things where if this disease is as serious as the government would have us believe, then they're betting that they can bring this, they can bring these Ebola patients, presumably Americans, into this country, and the problem won't break loose. There won't be a problem that affects a stewardess on one of the airlines. She won't catch anything on the airplane. The pilot won't catch anything. The crew won't catch anything. They got it all figured out. And it's just like one of those horror movies where you have these brilliant people that have got some idea, and it's all figured out, and it always goes cockeyed. The next thing you know, the creature is waiting back there in the bushes someplace. Well, you look at it. How hard would it be if Ebola is as dangerous as people say? And if we have Americans in Africa who have contracted Ebola, is it a better idea to bring them back to the United States where they can get treatment? Or would it be a better idea to build a facility in Africa where they could get the same treatment over there? Which is better for the United States of America? And it seems to me that it would be better, ultimately, I doubt that it would be much more costly, let's build a little hospital to deal with Ebola over in Africa. And any American gets the disease, fine, we'll bring them into that hospital and treat them there. Why bring them here? I mean, it's just, the dangers seem unreasonable to me. If assuming government's not exaggerating this whole thing in the first place, and that's not impossible. Some people believe that Ebola is nowhere near as dangerous as government has led us to believe. In fact, the first man to I saw a report that the first man to identify Ebola back, I think in the 1980s, he said the whole thing has been exaggerated. He'd be happy to sit on a train right next to a guy who had the Ebola disease. He doesn't think it's anywhere near as communicable as the government supposes. So, I don't know. What's the truth? What's the truth? I don't know. I don't want to ride on the Ebola train.
I don't either. They don't say how this patient is coming. Is he flying on Delta Airlines?
Yeah, I understand. is he first class, or do they put him back in the, with a regular passenger?
This isn't funny. It's not meant to be funny, but my gosh.
It's just ridiculous. Some of it is bizarre. I don't care if it's as bad as Obama says, as bad as the government implies, build the facility in Africa and treat them over there. And when they're healed, fine, bring them home.
But it's actually the Emory University Hospital in Atlanta that is supposed to receive the patient that is infected. And they actually have a specially built isolation.
I know, but do they have specially built isolation on the plane? Do they have specially built isolation?
No, my whole point, Al, is they already have an area that will treat patients that have serious infectious diseases. So this is already set up and programmed to receive not just this person, but so again, they're expecting.
I guess that. I still, you could set up mobile laboratories.
Agreed.
I mean, that could be airlifted.
I'm saying this is not good that they are already.
Set them up over there and treat them over there.
I agree with you. But I'm just saying that here you have a hospital that's already has a system set up. So what are they anticipating is my point.
I don't know what they're anticipating. Frank, our producer, he says he's seen reports that they have no cure for Ebola. So what are they going to do? Now, I don't know whether they have a cure or they don't have a cure. It's not something I know. But if Frank is correct, if there is no cure, why would they bring them here? All right, I'm sorry, you got Ebola. That's a bad situation, but it's not sufficient reason to haul you all the way back from Africa to the United States where you can give it to other people. I mean, some of us just have bad luck. Some of our lives are tragic. And as a result, sometimes we have to pay a price that is unfortunate, but nevertheless. This is part of the reason you got to take care of yourself. You need to learn to think independently. This parallels what we said earlier about investing in foreign countries. It's a little bit like traveling to foreign countries, and I'm not against that. I'm not going paranoid on this completely, but somewhere along the line, we have to take some responsibility. If we make a mistake, we have to be held accountable. We're out of time. I'm Alfred Addis, and those mistakes include investing in paper investments rather than gold or silver. I'm Alfred Addis, here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back on Monday. Have a good weekend. In the meantime, with the good Lord, Astute Melody and Frank, the producer. Bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.